going to talk with Ellen Gamrath in the home of Bill and Doris Dirks in Kent, Washington, so that she might relate some of her experiences and reactions to being a guest, staff, Holden Village, as well as being the board president from 78 to 85. When was it that you were first got acquainted with the Holden Village, Ellen?
In 1963, some friends of ours, the Lillies, had heard of the village starting up and talked us into spur of the moment heading up for Holden. We arrived unannounced, midsummer of 63, two couples and six kids, and not knowing what to expect, and were greeted warmly at the bus by Carol and Mary Hinderly, and spent just the weekend there, but from that time on had a determination to return, and every year since then to the present, our family has spent at least 1 week at the village, and most years, much more time. The village was very small in population, and we were housed up in Chalet 10. Very minimal furnishings. We had sleeping bags along, which we slept in, and every night the power went off at about 10 o'clock and things shut down. They had faculty, the old standbys, Rudy and Doris Edmonds, Beanie and Gertrude Lundholm, Paul Hain, and there was no distinction between, as I remember, between the people who were on teaching staff and the guests. Everyone pitched in, did anything that needed to be done, and even in those short 2 days, we had a feeling that it was our village. And of course, Mary and Carol communicated complete welcome, even though we weren't announced. And their enthusiasm, their living out the gospel was engaging and captivated us right from the beginning.
You might give us just a little background of your family. You have children, and you have a husband, of course. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Our family consists of myself and Jim, who's a physician, and we have three children. At the time that we first went up to Holden, Barbara was, our youngest was preschool, and then Linda, probably second grade, and David, third grade. So that from very early on, it became extended family. We're from the Midwest originally. I'm a preacher's daughter, and that was a tradition in our family back to the Reformation. Very rooted in the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, graduate of Valparaiso University, and an analogy occurs to me because others who have been to Valpo, particularly Betsy Nagel, who was on the board with me and went on at the same time as two of the first women ever to serve in that capacity, also was very active in Valparaiso, and we likened the community at Holden to what we had experienced at Valpo, with the exception that it was very strongly transgenerational at Holden, where it was much more homogeneous at Valpo. But the excitement, the gospel orientation, and the rootedness in the church but with a freedom for, and an openness that the gospel gives all of us, were characteristics that we saw in both places. Our family has seen Holden as an extension of family, and all of our children, it's a very important place. They've made friends there. It really has been a focus of our lives on a long-term basis.
Well, it sounds like you, somewhat like our family. Maybe we patterned our life after your life here, coming on the scene a little bit later. But all of our kids have been involved in Poland, and I understand also, coming back to your family here, that Linda, especially Linda Grace, is involved in marriage with another young fellow who was up in Poland Village for a while as a logger, wood chopping, getting the wood ready for winter.
Tom Smith,
right. And they got married eventually. And we were wondering whether they ever would get married, but they got married eventually. And
well,
now I understand Linda's expecting, is that right?
Yes.
Great.
End of October.
Yeah.
Linda was, and Tom were up at Holden for at least a year together in volunteer work. Linda was in the winter program, and she did stints as gardener, snack bar one summer. She was head of the snack bar, and then was in the kitchen and head cook for a 3-year period. So off and on during her early adult life, she spent a lot of time up there.
Yeah.
And met Tom, and as Bill said, was off and on.
Well, that's great. Did Barbara and David ever get up there? For staffing or anything?
Barbara spent an interim from PLU up there, Pacific Lutheran University,
yeah.
And so she was up there, but visited many times. During the years that Linda was there, our family spent Thanksgivings, Christmas, Easter, because the policy of the village is that long-term staff, their families have first crack at the holiday times, which, because otherwise the staffers are deprived of family. And so that we were in the village at all times of the year. Once I became board president, we began, because, and I'll get to that a little later, because we really made a definite commitment to be in the village and to experience it at many different times, and I'll come back to that later. But it's been a real blessing to all of our family, particularly to Linda, because she spent more time up there and met her husband there, and they have continued to love Holden. Thomas continued to go back to chop wood, and their friends and their supportive community are, to a large extent, Holden alumni. And the same has been true of Barbara. She's gone up very often. David was back in school, in medical school in the Midwest, which is where both Jim's and my families originate, in Michigan. And so David was back there during many of those years, but he accompanied our family there for, when he was in Seattle, for all of the years that we went there. I would say some has been a little less of an influence on his life, although when he became very serious about his wife, Lisa, he took her up there twice to sort of give her the Holden test and see how she liked it. And now that they have two children, their high priority is to go up and have their family as a unit experience Holden again.
Yes. And again, this is sort of a parallel between your family and ours, because Gretchen met her husband up there, Joel, and so they were up there several times as a village, Joel as a village. part of the whole picture, the whole story of what Holden is and what it does to a person's life and so forth. Let's get into a little bit more detail, particularly on the time that you were a board member and your activities and responsibilities as board president.
I would like, before we do that, Bill,
yep.
if it's okay to just
sure.
because of the flow of my thought, I would like to go back to what really attracted us to Holden. I talked about the community, mm-hmm. but with Carol and Mary Hinderly, their commitment to having an adult, or maybe adult isn't the right word, could be young adult too, but not to have it be a Bible camp, but to have it be a retreat center with theology as the focus, although many disciplines were included, for the laity, was something that was not being offered anyplace else in the church, and which to me had a validity and a wonderful excitement that this would be offered, and that the laity, in addition to the clergy, would be offered an opportunity. And I saw it as very, very Lutheran, and very thankful to Carol and Mary for their holding on to that dream and for not compromising it in any way. And maybe that's something where you and I are divergent a little, because you are a clergyman, and maybe not as aware of the real thirst and commitment that and also feelings of frustration that laity might meet in the average context that they have. And I think that has improved a great deal. You know, now there are a lot more opportunities, but when you look back to the early 60s, especially for a woman to have interest in those areas, was not recognized as being valid, and yet Holden was a place where you could speak your mind, and there was no one was given titles, so that you had a complete freedom to say if you disagreed with someone or to raise questions. It was a climate that just allowed this to flourish, the conversation, and not to feel intimidated, because so often women and laity within the church have felt that the authority was spoken from on high, and not to be able to raise the questions that were central in our lives. So that is, I think, right from the beginning, that plus the community is what drew us back to Holden.
Well, you're going right along my pattern of thought here anyhow, because I was going to ask you to do some recollecting from your position as on the board and so forth. In the three eras of directorships, Carol and Mary and John Schramm and Elmer Witt, and I don't want you to leave it there as far as Carol is concerned, but I'm sure you have a few more things that you can share with us about working with Carol and so forth, and you were on the board at that time too, weren't you, before he left?
Yes. Yeah. I came on the board in 1972, so we had been coming to the village for 9 years, or at least 8 years before I got on the board. But almost from the first year, I would say probably from the second year, Carol began to talk about wanting either Jim or I to be on the board. And he expressed dissatisfaction with the composition of the board, saying to us there were many people who were on it who never had been at the village, and he said he would like people who had a real love and commitment for the village. And I don't know firsthand the composition of the board, and others can speak to that, prior to 1972. But when the board was reorganized, then Jim had no interest in being on the board, because those organizational kind of things are not something that he enjoys. And so it then became a matter of whether or not there would be a position where I could serve. And but I can remember for years that Carol would say that this was his dream, to have people, to have a board that was composed of people who had a real commitment to the focus of Holden and a commitment in being there and in giving of themselves in many, many ways, their gifts.
In fact, that's how I was gotten on the board. Because we started coming up there then. Well, that's not a whole other story, but go ahead.
And have you ever gotten to tell your story, Bill? I think we need to reverse the roles here at some point.
No, some other time. It's your day.
Okay. Trying to think now where to begin. I've spoken of the wonderful spirit of Holden. I think there also was a heavy leaning on Carol and Mary to shape the village. And it is my strong belief that no other two people could have done it in quite the way that they did as a team in those early years. The contacts that Carol had, the people that he was able to attract for long-term commitments, were needed in the beginning stages for people who would come for the whole summer, who would give up their whole summer to be there with their families, like the Haynes and the Edmonds and the Lundholms. And I'm sure there were many more who just made that their place for the summer. But in a sense, as you looked over all of the years, it became a time then when people were counted on being there for the whole summer, so that it narrowed down, as the village matured, it narrowed down the breadth of the faculty. And I don't know if Carol and Mary spoke to this in their tape, but they did say to me that they felt that they could not cut these people back to a shorter time, that they had given so much to the village that they were not able to say, will you skip a summer, or will you come for part of the summer? It began to become almost ingrown. And what had been a strength and a necessity in the early years then became a little bit of a burden. And
what do you recall when this started to be enlarged, so when others were invited to be on the teaching staff?
Well, Mary and Carol did try to some extent, and the people that they attracted were wonderful, but there was a conscious decision made at the time of transition that teaching staff would be asked to serve for 3 weeks. And this was a very painful process for the people who had poured so much into Holden, and a real stress time. This was done in the planning stage when John Schramm first came in, and it created a lot of hostility. But in looking back now, it was a growing experience for the village. And just as surgery is painful, I think the reasons for doing it were certainly loving reasons and love for the village. One other thing occurred with the same people back every summer was that it began to be an in-group. And so although we were in from the very first years and always felt welcome, sometimes people who came for a week had trouble feeling that they fit in, or that there was an elitist kind of a feeling. And I don't think it was at all intentional, but it was just the people knew each other so well and had gone through so much together in the formation of the village, that it it did create some results that it really, and maybe those kind of things were experienced in the early Christian communities too.
That shows up also, not just with the teachings at that time, but even today, you ride the bus up there, and what happens when the bus stops and everybody gets out, and people who've never been up there before don't have any buddy that they know up there, and nobody come and give them the old hold and hug and all this, and they sort of all initially feel a little bit out of it, but that time dissipates after it's been there a little bit.
Well, I think we need to be very conscious of that, and it isn't a battle that you win once and for all. You have to keep fighting that battle. One of the things I remember from the early years was that people would be sung to as they came. They would be sung a welcome song, and as they left. And everyone who was in the village always tried to be at the bus as it left and came, so that you could say your hellos and your goodbyes to people. And as the village gets busier and fuller, it becomes harder to do it. But I certainly think that kind of an effort is something that sets the tone of the village for the people who come up there, and also the people who are leaving and for whom it's been a great experience. It's a good send-off. There are certain things that came to mean Holden, and this summer as we went up, I noticed one of them was missing, and that is in the bus there was always a little sort of a tattered sign that said the ride up is free and the trip down is costly, and I didn't see it this year, and I think some of those traditions, maybe it's up to us, if they're meaningful, it's like any kind of ritual, to make sure that they don't get lost and don't fall by the wayside. But this welcoming of people and integrating them into the village is difficult. And when you have a complete turnover in your summer months of your whole village, the people who are guests, becomes very stressful for the staff. But I think it should always be held up, the hospitality of the place. And during the years that I was board president, it amazed me. I would get a letter from someone who had been there in the late 60s and never had been back since, and held that memory of what it had meant to them in their faith journey high. I think it's great, but in another way it's sad that no other occasion occurred that inspired them or motivated them in their whole lifetime. But people have a sense of ownership in the place and of fondness for it. And that has been one of the real strengths. I remember in a survey we did of who the givers were, that about 90% were small contributions. And Carol Hinderling, that was one of his wonderful, wonderful strengths, is he had a marvelous ability to make people feel good about sacrificial giving. I don't think there, maybe one in a million, have that special gift that he had. And his having it during those years when they were living completely on credit as far as getting even groceries up there, never knowing how many people were going to be in the village or if they would have enough money to keep it going from one week to the next. Lots of Carol's energies went into just going out and being, as he calls, a beggar for the Lord, his term. And I've seen him do it, and he really is a begging, but he had more courage in doing that and ended up with people giving sacrificially. So that I think was one of the gifts that God gave to the village, in providing someone like Carol who was willing to do it, willing to go out and put himself on the line and be vulnerable and to ask and keep asking for the money.
Well, he himself was totally sold on the village. Initially, why he was, according to the records, why he was wondering about whether or not it would really work out. And then he got it in there, taking hold of the whole thing. The more he worked on it, the deeper he got in, and the more he was sold on the whole problem, the whole situation of the whole village, and what it meant, and what it could mean to individual renewal in the faith and to parish renewal.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that last bill is one thing that's really been held up at Holden, is it is not a place of rebellion, but it, although new things may be tried and new ideas emerge, but it is a place that is rooted both in the gospel and in the parish, because the people go back to the parishes, and it's a place that is there to serve and to strengthen the parish also. So it isn't a renegade kind of operation. I remember the early years and the Holden reunion that we would have in Seattle. One year, Werner called me up, and the reunion was, maybe 2 weeks away at the most, and they had about 20 reservations, and this was before I was on the board. I just, someone who had gone up to Holden, and he asked if I would do some calling, because they were having it at the Seattle Center, and they needed to have like 500, or Holden would have had to cover the bill for the caterers and everything. So maybe it was holy insanity or something, but I said I would do it. And he had a list of people in the Seattle area who had either expressed an interest in Holden, maybe never even been there, or who had people who had been up there at some time or another, and nonstop for the next 3 or 4 days, I called people and tried to communicate the enthusiasm, and miracle of miracles, the place was packed and the spirit good, and those early years, it took a lot of energy, but there was those gatherings did provide a momentum publicity and people knowing about Holden. So people would be encouraged to bring friends who'd never even heard about it and fill whole tables. And it was insane, but wonderful, and wonderful to be a part of it. I would say that lots of work has been gone into Holden by many people, but what has come back in the terms of friendships, like your family and our family, you know, we go back a long way, and that's multiplied over and over again for people. People who have just met the right person in their life at a particular time up there. But Werner too, and Werner and Carol together were a good team, because Werner had a practical side to him, and Carol was total dreamer and totally impractical. And you could love him for it, but yet a village does not just go on that kind of theme. So seemed that God always provided the person that was needed at the time that they were needed. And I remember Carol saying that when that no longer happened, although he felt he might not be around at that time, and he was right, but if that should stop occurring, that God would provide, and that God would provide the right person. And when there was a real need, and not something, a whim or a, but a need for the place to continue, then if that was not provided, he hoped that the board would look very carefully at whether or not the place, the institution, had outlived its purpose. And that was said with great conviction and sincerity by Carol.
One take a look at continuing this now with the John Schramm years?
Well, there are a few more things I want to
say. Oh, okay.
Before we began this, Bill said, do you think you need a 90-minute or 60-minute tape? And I thought maybe a 30-minute or 20-minute would do, but you can tell my enthusiasm for Holden gets generated by Bill. And I'll just do this real briefly.
Okay,
but,
fine. Take your time.
In the years that Carol was there, in particular at the end, there came into strong focus a feeling of them and us, of the winter community, which began very simply with Werner, and, well, I guess even before Werner, it was Horty up at Holden, wasn't it, in the wintertime, just as a caretaker, and then Werner, and then holidays, people would come up like the Gillings, and it became a small community. And then during Carol's time, he instituted lifestyle programs, which John Grauber then headed, who was his son-in-law. But there came a feeling of, as the village grew, two kinds of feelings emerged. One was between the staff and the guests in the summertime, that the staff would become worn and with the serving and the hospitality, and they looked at the guests as a different kind of a breed. The other feeling was that the people who lived long-term in the community or winter community began to feel like the board, other people did not understand the village that they knew. And there emerged conflict of ownership, a feeling, who was the village, who owned the village. And toward the end of Carol's time there, some of this sort of boiled over, and some of the confrontations and unhappiness or frustrations with the village were rooted in that. So that some of the directions that occurred when John Tran came are attributable to that, and that's some of the corrective kind of things that were done. So I think it's important to know that as far as history is concerned. I have heard people focus in each administration on the mistakes that were made. And as someone who's been there long term, I just would like to say that every director has had his share of mistakes. And I sort of look at it as holy humility, that God gives us that so none of us think that any era is perfect. They're all flawed, and yet we're all under the gospel, so we can forgive and go on.
It's all part of the growing pains of old village.
Right. I think of the happy exchange during Carol's time, and it was something that was perfectly logical, because I remember in particular one 4th of July, we had, the village had let the boat company know how many people were going out in advance so that they knew how many would be waiting down at Lucerne, and we were sitting down there and watched the boat returning from Stehekin way out in the middle of the lake where we couldn't even yell angrily at it, loaded with people because they had so many holiday passengers that they had completely filled their boat with passengers and had no intention of picking up a single person at Lucerne. And so there we were, 45 minutes down from the village with no lunch. We knew the boat was going, Lady of the Lake, was going to steam all the way back to Chelan and come back late in the afternoon to pick us up. But we were totally at the mercy of the boat company, so there was nothing that could be done. And all of those frustrations for the administration and for the guests naturally led to the acquisition of the Happy Exchange. And then that...
You need to describe the Happy Exchange.
Okay, yeah. The Happy Exchange, well, first of all, the name is marvelous. It comes from the exchange of our guilt for Christ's grace. It's just, is that the way to explain
right,
it, Bill?
That's very good.
And that's something that, as Christians, we all engage in. We exchange our burdens for the freedom of the gospel. And so that was the name given to a boat that was actually donated to the village through, again, Carol's marvelous ability to get gifts and fundraising. But then it opened up a whole new galaxy of expectations and of problems, really. And you needed someone to pilot the boat. You needed to have decisions made as to who could ride on it. And people began to think of it as another way of getting up and down the lake, and would wonder why certain people could ride on it and other people couldn't. And then it became a real, when we finally decided to dispose of it, a real pain for over a long period of time, because the person who bought it had possession, but were very slow in paying it off. So, but it finally worked out okay. And for, I guess, in looking back, at certain eras, there's something that is very appropriate, and then you have to discern when that time has passed and move on to something else.
That's one thing about Holden, wasn't afraid to experiment with certain forms of expression. That whole thing also was alleviated a little bit by the fact that the Chelan Boat Company built a bigger boat instead of the whole 300 people or so.
But you wonder if maybe it wasn't a little pressure because they knew we had a boat, and so that they rose to the occasion. Now that's a very good point, Bill, that Holden has not been afraid to make mistakes and to try things. If you always try to be right and to be very, very cautious, it kills spirit. And so maybe we should look at the mistakes that are made in that kind of life. And they aren't really mistakes. There's a experimentation.
Experiment, that's right.
Yeah.
See how it would work out.
Well, as I said, at the end of Carroll's administration, there was healing that needed to be done, and although Fritz Norstedt was not, he was interim director for 1 year, and his background in psychology and his willingness to listen to everyone who had anything to say was a good space to provide. Coming after Carroll with his strong personality and his individual style, which probably will never be matched in Holden's history again, and his flair and his intuitive knowing when anyone was hurting, and his total generosity, and the total chaos that surrounded him, but the loving chaos, there needed to be a space between Carroll and whoever would follow him. And I was on the board the last years of Carroll's time in the village, and then during the transition time and the selection of John Schramm as the director of Holden Village. And then when John became director, because Vern Dickey, who had been the only other board president, was John's uncle by marriage, and he felt that it would be criticized or seen as a conflict of interest. So he said that he was not up for re-election for board president. And in retrospect, I think it was a very wise and a wonderful decision, not only because it gave me a chance to be board president, but because it proved something, an assumption to be false, that was a very, for Holden, a very destructive assumption. Many people at that time who had a wonderful loyalty and were dedicated to Holden felt that Holden could not exist without Carroll Hinderman and without Vern Nietzsche. And if the John Schramm era proved nothing else, it proved that that place is not dependent on the Carroll Hinderman or a Vern Nietzsche or a John Schramm or an Ellen Gamble. It is a gift of God, and it is, as long as it is serving God's purpose, it is not because it is dependent on God and not the human person.
That's also part of the title of Charles Lutz's book on Holden, Surprising Gift. That's also the surprising part of it. It's a gift to ourselves, too, as we relate to each other and working through the village.
Right.
And as I look at the years, Vern Rickey, in my opinion, was exactly the right person to be a ballast for Carol. Carol needed someone who, like a lawyer, was very concise and who could direct things and who could get to the bottom line and could be very strong in countering Carol's strong personality. So that was a gift during those years, and he was the right person for that time.
Vern was there at the very beginning, too.
He was there prior to Carol.
Right.
And he knew some of the early stresses so that he could cope with those, too. The Gilbert years, the conflict in which direction Holden would be, whether it was program had priority or facility, the plant. And to keep program in the fore when the plant was so run down in the beginning was a real juggling act and a real miracle. And then working with the Forest Service was another whole area, and Werner was a master at that. The combination of Werner and Vern and Carol was the right one for all of those years. When John Schramm became director in 1978, and I assumed the presidency of the board, began a whole new era. John's strength lay in building strong community, and I think perhaps a better balance between the winter and the summer community, and also his great organizational ability and justice orientation shifted the focus of the village somewhat. But I'd say, Bill, that as before, during Carol's years, the centralness of the gospel remained the heart of the village. And even though some of the external manifestations shifted somewhat, there was still that given. And during that time, too, maybe it was the climate outside the village, but we began to realize how inaccessible the village was to the handicapped. And so there was a real shift in providing access for the handicapped. And attempts, although during Carol's administration, there had been one time when the black community was invited into the village. But for one reason or another, that turned into quite a confrontation. And so then during John's years again, attempts were made to foster more participation by minorities. And that has always been difficult because I guess the constituency of a Lutheran church is predominantly Nordic white. So to do it in a way that is to elicit participation in a way that is not something that's stuck on, but that is generated naturally in an authentic way is really a pretty tough thing to do. I would say, skipping ahead, that maybe it took a number of years, but during Elmer's administration, Holden on the Mountaintop, or wait, Rainbow on the Mountaintop, has had more viability than all the efforts that we made before.
And there's another postscript to that, too. But now the administration has been requested by the by the trustees to prepare a statement on a whole multicultural ministry. So that's it goes beyond, well, that's also involved as far as Rainbow and that if her conversation or her imagery there, you would think of it in multicultural, but this specifically designates a multicultural ministry. So that, and I discovered this more when I went back over the latest minutes that came out, which I put into the archives, that that was the case, and it'd be interesting to see what the administration comes up with in terms of a multicultural ministry or philosophy or whatever you might want to call it.
It's approaching a little broader sense.
Yeah. It'll take a while. That's all right. You know, the village will eventually come up with that because that's all part and parcel of the gospel.
Right. Neither Greek nor Jew nor male nor female.
Right. All.
St. Paul.
During John's years, there was a real tightening up of priorities and budget expenditures and a shift within the community to reimbursement of the people who made commitments to a stipend, which was something quite different, consciously sitting down with them and determining how much they actually needed to allow them to make a long-term commitment to holding so that the salary range was based on need rather than on actual job description or what was done. And this was a major kind of shift in the community, and I think took someone like John and Mary Schramm, who had made that their own lifestyle, and who by their example in their own request for less money than the board was willing to give them, set the pace. But that was, during the first years of John's being there was a real financial crunch because we missed Carol's ability to raise money. And because of the stresses of the transition in directors, many who had given before maybe were inclined or maybe not acknowledged in the way that Carol could acknowledge their giving. And so giving did fall off, and for several years it was really almost a crisis situation. So that slack was taken up by a whole new generation of committed people, plus the fact that every item was looked at carefully as far as expenditures, so that what Carol's free ruling style, which was covered by his own ability to raise funds, and this was now a whole new different style. The community began designating the Sunday offerings also during this time for particular outreach, and for instance, during one summer, all of the contributions went towards digging a well in Zimbabwe, and I think also in Namibia. There was a project whereby the seminary had funds designated so that they could supply books for the seminary, and so that each summer, it became the tradition to designate the Sunday offering for a particular outreach ministry. And this was one way, the idea behind it was a way to expand Holden's outlook and to make it global, ecumenical. And the offerings increased as people saw it as a way to channel their contributions towards
issue or humanitarian effort. And also during this time, suddenly occurred to us that what was happening was that the board was trying to do all of the work that the designation, and I'm saying that clearly, the differentiation between the trustees and the board had become very blurred because, perhaps because of Carol's style, who knows, but during the other years, everything was brought to everyone. So what would happen is the board members would get off the bus, and the body would hold them, and they would be given a huge sheaf of financial data to digest before the board would start meeting. And then the focus tended to be on that, where we clarified for the board that the board's function was to do the program planning and the greening, which was really a lot more fun than the financial nitty-gritty of things, and that they would make recommendations, or they would say what they wanted accomplished, and then it was up to the trustees who met afterwards to determine what was possible, and they were responsible back to the board. So in other words, if the board wanted something done and the trustees would say, well, that just can't be done, we don't have the funds to do it, then they have to come back and express that to the trustees.
I think it should be clarified here that the membership of the trustees is taken from the membership of the board.
Yes. The larger groups are the board who represent the constituency of Holden Village. And then from that group are elected a group of, I believe, nine representatives who then deal with the financial matters of the village. And the reason being that then the board is freer to do the dreaming and the visionary things and not bogged down with the other. Within the trustees, the group of nine, then there is an executive group that when there is a crisis or some decision needs to be made, are able to act. As the time for John and Mary's leaving approached, I sent out a letter, a document called the Holy Week Letter, asking for visionary dreaming of what Holden might be. And in the archives, there are copies of that. But it was a request for, in between board meetings, which occur once a year, usually, at the village, to give thought and to give direction to Holden's program and to what the priorities were.
This was also after the 20th anniversary, too, wasn't it?
Right, that's right, Bill.
Yeah.
There was the 20th anniversary, which became a time for looking back and seeing where we had come from, and then thinking ahead to where we were going.
Right.
And it flowed out of a particularly wonderful week that our family spent at the village over Easter, Holy Week and Easter, and really a feeling of the continuity and the rootedness that place has in an expression of Christian community. It was a wonderful experience. But then coming from that, what are the thoughts that these board members should be giving input as to what directions we're going to be taking at this milestone, at this 20th anniversary? Right here, I'd like to take just a little sort of a side trip. One of the things that from the early days of the village was a tradition was the prayers. Each day of the week, a particular concern of the church would be addressed. And the format was that at noon, actually Werner was the one who usually led them under the trees, and whoever wanted to come, and usually with a fairly small group, would then pray for what the concerns were. It could be health concerns one day, or the government of the church and of the nation and the different governments in the world. Can you think of any others? Or musicians. I know one, musicians and artists. And the tradition was that each year when Holden published a calendar, they would also list that. So the people who were dispersed could know that on a particular day of the week that the prayers would be given for that cause. And not too long ago, there was an article by Marty Marty in the 15th century, and he mentioned the fact that it was his feeling that there are places in this world where you know intercession is going on, and it's going on a continuing basis, and this is what holds the world together. And one of the places that he mentioned was Holy Village. And it is something that in the last few years has sort of fallen by the wayside. Perhaps when Werner left and there was no one that took that tradition seriously. The board, the year before I left the board, which was in, let's say, 1986, voted again to reinstitute it, reinstated. But when I talk to people on the board now, which is 1989, it says that somehow it's gotten lost in the cracks again with changeover. The administration. So it's just one of those things that may seem sort of superficial or what, but it is something that is really central to the intent of the village.
Even if you were out under the bell, so to speak, in the patio area, you'd see the people inside at noontime. Even if you didn't join them, you knew that there was some intercession going on. And that was kind of, you know, helpful in your own prayer life.
And I think a recognition that all of history and all of destiny is in God's hands, and not to forget that it's not really up to us in God's hands. I'm trying to think of other things. During the Schramm years, there was an effort made, lots of energy poured into developing CERN as a hospitality outreach. CERN is on Lake Chelan, and it's the point of debarkation and embarkation for the people coming up to Holden. It's where the dock is. And over the years, there had been various sort of shaky endeavors down there with boat rental and food service and cabins, and Forest Service seemed very interested in having Holden Village, who has a track record of being very responsible, take over. And so Joel Oinus, Bill Dirks' son-in-law, and Gretchen, Bill and Doris's daughter, had a real interest in that community and had agreed, while he was pastor at Holden, had agreed to be the one to establish. But somewhere down the line in the hierarchy of the Forest Service, the whole thing was vetoed. And
you know, they had Joel had come up with and working together on it, had come up with a kind of a master plan for the development of the CERN.
Mm-hmm.
Something other than it was. And it was a beautiful plan, allowing people to have an outlook, an introduction to the whole Railroad Creek Valley, and on up to the village, on up to the Pacific Crest Trail.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a real blow to the village when this was vetoed by not the regional, but the still further up the line here, somebody down in Portland, I think,
mm-hmm.
decided no longer we can't have this kind of stuff.
But many, much of the resources of Holden went into that.
Yes.
And it was something that would have been a wonderful, wonderful outfit. And then, of course, Holden was obliged to do the cleanup of the mess of all the previous years. So,
well, you need to also to remember that part of the CERN was a gift to Holden by Mike Griffin.
Yeah, it had been given when they Mike Griffin had the concession down there. It is on Forest Service land, though, so that the Forest Service has the ultimate say.
Right.
What Mike Griffin gave to Holden were the existing buildings and the assets that were down there. And but again, it was one of those things that Holden was willing to take risk and have a dream, and it didn't work out, but that still doesn't invalidate the risk-taking. And then during that time, it had been a dream since Carol Hinderly's days to have a farm in a place away from Golden that people could work. And we had the property that had been purchased at 25 Mile Creek, and that was the terminus for many people going down lake. And the man who ran the boat, the Happy Exchange that was mentioned earlier, his wife and child lived in the house at 25 Mile. Well, a dream evolved because there was other property there that had been used for Holden parking too, of having a house there, a solar house. And so for several years, a lot of energy went into building of that and experimental farming. It was thought to be a place where people would come, as we had envisioned Lucerne, to see what could be done with organic farming and crops, and to have maybe a restaurant or a place where people could eat. At least that was the plan for Lucerne. But a community down lake, which was called Tocoa. And since Lucerne did not go, Joel and Gretchen Oyes poured their energies into that, into the building of the house, and gave how many years? Was it 3 years?
Yeah, I think
3 years.
Like that. They, in other words, their village stay had been extended. They'd been asked to stay on, even though his time was up at that time.
Mm-hmm. And there were many other volunteers who agreed to live in community and to build that. And the house was completed, and with volunteer labor. And but then the community disintegrated. And
this was after Joel and Gretchen left.
Yeah, Joel and Gretchen left, and it seemed that the right combination of people to keep it going couldn't be found. And once again, though, it was risk that didn't pay off, and people looking from the outside could be critical of all of these risks that were taken over the years from the time of Carol and Mary's beginning, that some worked and some didn't. But again, it's the taking of the risk and the being willing to do it, and not getting bogged down in the failure then when it occurs, but moving on and knowing that God is still with us and that there is a place for holding. After 6 years, John and Mary felt a call to a different ministry, and the board repeated the call process and called Elmer Witt to be the next director. And my time, as far as being on, I remained as board president for 1 year for the transition with Elmer. Did you want to check something? Oh. We're getting close to the end.
Yeah.
And so the amount that I can speak on that is minimal. And I remained on the board till 86, and we continued to go up to the village and to support it, and to, in a different capacity, to feel close to it, and that it continues to be a blessing. During my last year as board president, we initiated one other innovation, which I think has been very productive to the functioning of the board, and that is called the Think Groups. Often things would come up during the board meetings to be considered, and they really could not be explored by the whole group just because of time restrictions, input, and so there were different categories designated, and then people were given the opportunity to volunteer for a particular group. And I might mention what some of those were. Can you stop it for just a second, Bill? Well, this is the point of clarification. As previously, the clarification of board responsibilities and functions versus the trustees' functions helped the board to function more efficiently and to be able to address
problems and also do some dreaming. So at this point, the think groups were an effort, and I feel really successful, to allow people to concentrate. Concern that the think groups focused on. One was long-range planning. One was Tocoa Concept Ministries, exploring outreach at Holden, from Holden. Another was fundraising, publicity, and history. A fourth was Holden Environmental Think Group. And a fifth, Volunteerism and Community Think Group, dealing with recruitment, training, support, and care of volunteers at the village. These have shifted some over the years, but the basic concept of having a smaller group focus on a particular area and then give input to the total board so that decisions can be made and directions charted still remains a valid one. At the end of my time on the board, there was a shift to more emphasis on fundraising because of some of the physical needs of the village, the plant needs, such as the sewer system, re-roofing the chalets, and it was a major capital expenditure push, which hurt the Lutz headed. And now at the time that this is being taped, that three-year push has come to an end, and Bill can probably speak about what's happened to that. But a lot of the energy and the focus of the board did turn in that direction, at least during this period of time.
Yeah, it's up at the end of the time that was designated. I don't remember it right now. At the end of the Vision Fund Drive, is what the Vision Fund is called. That. The, and when that ends, which is part of which is be collecting or receiving rather the promises of the various people who want to donate to that. Then the board and trustees need to come up with and the village to get the whole thing involved here. A regular way of an annual call for funds to help support the village, and they'll in the near future they'll be coming up with that kind of direction. It's not going to be a hit and miss proposition, but a definite setup, a definite plan for continuing, but not such a strong one time emphasis on the continuing thrust.
And I would agree with you, Bill, that those who give support to the village need to be aware of how important that is to the village, their financial support, their prayer support, their being there, and that the base needs to be widened. It's sort of always been proven that when Holden has a real need, the constituency respond, but that's sort of a hit and miss, like when the garage burned down. Within 48 hours of the work getting out, the exact amount that was needed for a replacement had arrived. And but yet to have people feel an ongoing commitment to Holden, and that is really difficult because as the mailing lists grow larger and the place touches more people, to continue that intimacy and that feeling of connectedness is really a challenge. And I certainly would wish the board and those who are working on that well. I really don't have any more thoughts, Bill, unless you have other questions you'd like to ask. I know that working with Carol and Mary, and then even more closely with John and Mary, has think that, as I said, that Werner and Vern and Carol were the right combination for the early years, that during the period that I was most active, and that Werner and John and I were the right combination for those years with each of our diverse talents, and that whoever is deeply involved with the village should make an effort to know the village in all of its seasons, and should make an effort to know it at all of the levels of participation by being in the village and by doing the things that need to be done, by being a servant to the people and extending hospitality and caring in a way that typifies the village and that has been given to all of us who have had the joy of being part of the community.
Part of the dancing servant.
And we dance and we rejoice, and yet there is still the aspect of servanthood. There is the cross is a central part of our theology, along with Easter.
You have any further to say?
No, that's it.
All right. Well, this has been real fascinating and interesting, and gave me some things I didn't think about or know about. This particular taping took place on August the 2nd, 1989. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you very much.